Deluna Coffee, come explore our world of coffee. Founded by the first family of Florida State Coffee and based in Pensacola, Florida, Deluna Coffee is the driving passion of the Lemix family. Ed, his wife Courtney, and their son Brett. Their tailgating spot out front, the Unconquered Statue, is their own slice of paradise. But the real delight is Deluna's blend of Kona, Maui, Kenya, Colombian, and Brazilian beans that they call their liquid gold brew. In fact, they called it paradise. Try it or one of their two dozen blends and get a discount when you use the promo code WARCHANT15. Visit DelunaCoffee.com and check out their Facebook and Instagram.
From Sally to Cali,
it's time to wake up!
Wake up! Wake up! Wake up! WarChant.com is your ultimate seminal sports source.
And this is Wake Up WarChant, fueled by Deluna Coffee.
Coffee's for closers only.
Now here's WarChant.com's Aslan Hudjavandi
and Corey Clark.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
If I can't do it, homie, it can't be done.
Wake up! What's up? It's Wake Up WarChant. It is fueled by Deluna Coffee. DelunaCoffee.com. Come explore our world of coffee. Promo code is WarChant15 over on the website. You can save 15% on your order. Get some coffee for yourself. Get some coffee for the people that you care about. Maybe even for your enemies. You know, it's, you know, become friends. Kind of like Squanto offering food to the pilgrims. Offer them an olive branch of coffee. Friendship. It makes everything better. Just like being a Florida State fan on WarChant.com makes everything better. Promo code is WarChant30. Corey, people say that podcasts are supposed to push people to the premium content that's provided on the home base, if you will. But I'm just going to ask you, you want to go ahead and just summarize what happened at the press conference on Monday, your key takeaways, or do we need to push people to the website? We always need to push people there, but you know, people here, they want us to kind of distill things down for them too, I think. So it's a battle.
It is a battle. I will say that, you know, we also put it up on YouTube, so the stuff that happens in the press conference is out there. It's public domain when we're throwing it up on the YouTube. So go ahead and subscribe to that YouTube channel too. Hit that bell, hit that subscribe, and you'll get all the press conference, all the nuggets you'll get from Ira and Aslan and Jeff and Tom and myself, buddy. You're missing out if you're not subscribed to the YouTube channel. Yeah. Was that a good enough answer?
Yeah, man. The biggest takeaway for me, shout out to Mike Norvell for just being a human being, I guess, right? And embracing this rivalry, not giving us total coach speak, faceless enemy. Ultimately, it is about what Florida State is going to practice and execute ultimately on Saturday. But there has to be something extra for these games. Maybe not extra, but there just has to be a little bit of something has to be different. I know you want to try to keep everything constant and steady and consistent, but some things just matter more. This podcast is just a little bit more important than other podcasts. You folks know right. These sort of things. I really like that impassioned answer about when he starts first day of fall camp, he talks about two teams, Miami and this one. He wouldn't even say their name.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
And he wouldn't say Miami 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I don't know about that, but hey, it's, you know, it reminds me of Dan Mullen when I was covering him in Mississippi State, and he would call him the school up north. He would go whole right. Urban Meyer, school up north, or whatever he would say about Michigan. He called us a school out west when he was at Florida. It's like, hey, man, recognize us. But nonetheless, what a great opening salvo for this week from your head football coach, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, and again, I'm not going to take full credit, but it was my question, right, Aslan? Again, absolutely. I don't ask many. I'm coming for the quality, yes. Not the quantity, and I ask plenty of bad ones too. But that one, I was wondering if it struck you like it struck me, like the fact that he does talk so openly about how big a week it is. This is a huge week. It's a huge opportunity. He did that for the Miami game too, but especially for this one, and it started after the Boston College game that Saturday. He was talking about, we know what's in front of us. This is a huge week. It's like, that's why I asked him. That's why it struck me is like, he seems to lean into the rivalry, like really embrace the expectations. He knows how big it is to the fan base. He knows how big it is to the players. It's a really smart tact on his part, tactic to take because, you know, when you're an outsider, and I mean outsider, I mean, we're all outsiders, right? We all come from somewhere. We're not all born in Doak Campbell Stadium. But when you haven't been a part of the program and you've been in all these other places, it maybe the fan base doesn't know how they don't know how importantly you take a rivalry game. man, that is the exact right tone to take. Don't say it's a faceless opponent. Don't treat it like it's the Falcons versus the Jets. This is a huge deal that runs really deep in all of your fans' blood, and it means a lot to them. So for him to embrace it and acknowledge how important it is, and that it isn't just any other week, I think is the perfect tack to take. And, yeah, it had me fired up too, man. I was ready to go play. I was ready to go play the Florida beat writers anyway.
So I kind of wanted to bust out that side door when he was walking off the podium, just to kind of illustrate, like, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, I wanted to high-five Ira.
Yeah.
Or headbutt him.
You know, there's obviously been bigger, more important stakes between these two teams. But it's still, you're still kind of putting your neck out there because, and it started with the Miami game, as you mentioned, like, to get to where they want to go, at least at this season. Listen, you're a Florida State fan. If you don't compete for a national championship, your season is a disappointment. All that said, from where they were at the end of this season, where they were 2 years ago, to the fact that you can maybe get to a bowl game, beat your two chief rivals, you can't top it. I mean, maybe if you beat Clemson, but I'm not going to be all that picky about it. But the fact that he does realize, starting that Miami game, like, we need to win out to really salvage the season and get everything back on track, get us back on schedule. And he could have kind of punted and been like, hey, you know, all these games are important. We definitely realize our fans care about this, but we're going to go about our business. He's putting his neck out, man, because you had to beat Miami to keep the bowl hopes alive. You had to go up to Boston College and hold serve, and now you got to go to Gainesville. And who knows? I mean, that's, again, I understand people don't like me being too overly confident about that game. I understand, like, when you're a fan, you're even 2013. Part of me is like, we could maybe lose this game. Like, Florida could, you know, they just want to play spoiler. They got nothing to play for but just a ruined Florida State season, and that might be enough for them to come in here and, or not come in here, but take Florida State down in the swamp. So I understand every game you play against your rival, you're never overly confident about. But I'm confident about the game, and even more so when I realize just how emboldened the head football coach is, and kind of what Papucha said about everything. Starts from the top down with this program, and that's what Mike Norvell's message is to this team going to the week. So we're in good hands. Take that, Florida. 2-point favorite, though. What? What? Still? Still a 2-point favorite, though. Disrespect.
Hey, you know, hey, that's fine. You want to be an underdog. You play better when you're an underdog. Yeah, you know, I think he's hit all the right notes, man, when it comes to, you know, really starting from the question 2 months ago about the recruits. He's hit all the right notes with this fan base. This has not been a perfect team. He has not been a perfect coach in games, in some of the decisions they made early in the season especially. But I feel like most Florida State fans, when they watch his team play, and now when they watch him speak about things like this, about the Florida game, about recruiting, about anything and everything, they're starting to believe in him. Now, that can come and go. I'm sure there are plenty of all Florida fans believed in Dan Mullen after the Alabama loss. Like, wow, this guy's incredible. You know, things can fade quickly, but I don't see it with this guy. He does seem to really get it and understand it. It's not coach speak. It means a lot to him. And it means a lot to him because he knows how much it means to everyone else. So, you know, some of these guys, when they come from, well, anywhere else, they feel like mercenaries. Now, Jimbo didn't, because Jimbo was steeped in Florida State tradition. Like, he knew all about Florida State because he'd been coming to games and watching games since the late 80s with Terry Bowden. But so it meant a lot to him, too. And he beat the bejesus out of his rivals when he was here. He knew how important that was. But, you know, not every coach at every school gets it or understands it or really even cares. This guy does. That's a big deal. It's a great I would expect most Florida State fans, when they're watching that minute clip that we put on YouTube, just get really fired up. It doesn't mean they're going to win. It doesn't mean, but it means that your guy cares, and he's not afraid of the moment. He's not afraid to say he cares.
Exactly.
Just like he's not afraid to say that they want to go to a bowl. Like that would be a really big deal. It's cool to have short-term goals like that and embrace them and go for them. Now, you're going to fall on your face sometimes, but that's the way to do it, man. Like, he approaches life a little differently than I do. I think you guys know, I would be like, hey, even if we lose, look at our S&P index. Look at our efficiency, guys. We're moving. Win or lose, it's fine. We're doing things. This guy really wants to win, and he embraces that challenge because he knows what it would mean if they could actually close it out. I think, man, if they won this game, I know you can't win ACC Coach of the Year at 6-6, but, man, I'd be hard pressed. I'd put him in my top two or three because this is an all-time turnaround. And for him, if he could close it out with a 6-6, He's got a 500 record in conference. I think they're 4-4, right? Maybe. And two wins over your rivals. That's about as good a turnaround as you can have in the middle of a season. But either way, it's cool to see, man. He does a good job for the most part in those press conferences. Again, it seemed like he was kind of yelling at me. I think we're in on it together now at this point. But he would not take his eyes off me, so I could not type what he was saying because I didn't want to be rude. Much like the recruiting question before the Syracuse game, he stared daggers at me. He wasn't mad at me, but he was staring at me intently. And it's like, buddy, I can't look away. I can't do it. I'm not going to lose eye contact. So I just stood there and nodded. And I did have a luckily we're still wearing masks. So I had a smirk on my face most of the time on Monday when he was doing it. Like, I was like, oh, here we go again. Another viral Norvell moment brought to you by Corey Clark. But yeah, it was, so I had a smirk on my face, and that might've been weird if in the moment he could see my, I would have been fighting really hard to like make my lips, purse my lips back up. But I didn't have to, just had a nice little smirk on my face the whole time. Not because I thought it was funny. It's just, I was like, cause I was into it too, man. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Norvell, tell him. If you don't want to be here, go somewhere else. You don't belong here. If you're not up for this game, go somewhere else. You don't belong at Florida State. Yeah, I was into it. I thought it was all a really good speech.
Speaking of Corey being the spark with all this, shout out to our guy here, T_Hall on Twitter. He sent me a screenshot of a different entity covering the program that was talking about, and they clipped out Norvell's response to your question about the recruits from a few weeks ago and captioned it, Florida State is 5-2 since his press conference, and this screenshot the person sent me. And in one of the comments, somebody said, let Corey Clark break the rock after we win our bowl.
Absolutely. So. I'll do it. You think the team would have a problem with that? Like if Norvell and Fuller get together and it's like, I don't know, man. I think it should be Keyshawn or Jordan. Well, Corey Clark's upstairs in the press box. Why don't we go get him? Yeah, that would get everybody fired up, sure.
Hey, guys, if you're interested in investing in cryptocurrencies but you don't know where to start, Kraken app, right? The Kraken app. With that app, you can buy and sell over 50 of the most popular cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dogecoin, Ripple, all on the go, palm of your hand, mobile device, laptop, PC, desktop, wherever. It's super easy to get started. You can download the app, create your account, and you'll be investing in minutes, or you can go to the website, kraken.com/warchant, K-R-A-K-E-N. One of the coolest things about buying the crypto through the Kraken app, as we keep telling you folks, is that, you know, big risk, big reward, right? When you get involved in the investing game. But you can just start with as little as $10, get your feet wet, get comfortable with your surroundings on the Kraken app. So go ahead, download it off the App Store, visit the website, kraken.com/warchant, and find out for yourself why Kraken has been one of the highest rated places to buy crypto for the last 10 years.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Corey, it is Thanksgiving week. It is Renegade Express time. We're going to try to get as much of these as we can. We'll have a live show later today, 5:45 p.m. Tuesday. And that might be it for us for the week. Or actually, maybe we'll do another one. No, yeah, it'll be our Wednesday show. If we have too many on this mailbag, we might have a Friday show. But, yeah, I don't know. I should have had a better message than that, but whatever. Warpath Noel, Corey, you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
He says, wake up, last game of the regular season, all on the line, expecting a big win for the good guys. What was your favorite in-person memory of beating the Lizards? I mean, yours wore to done, right? I mean, mine was Sam.
No,
Rick's
I wasn't
Sam.
There.
Oh, you weren't? I was right, your one. Sister. Yeah, you went to the game of the century and let your sister go to that one. For me, it's 2003, Rick's to Sam. Beating Florida in that stadium is just... I don't want to go overboard and say it made me, I was happier that night than I was the night in Pasadena. It's close. I'm not even lying. I was younger. I was less, jaded. I was more drunk. Was with a bigger crowd of friends. It was only with me and Mercedes, Mike, and his dad in the stadium for Pasadena for the Rose Bowl championship. But the Rick's to Sam thing was amazing because we were up early in the first half and we talked so much crap. There was this guy in front of us that literally had a rat tail. It was him and his old lady. And he just looked like your quintessential Levy County, I don't know, Gilchrist County, whatever's around Alachua County, Gator fan, third generation, starter jacket, crusty old hat, rat tail hanging out the back of it. And one of my buddies was just kept calling like, rat tail, rat tail. And he bailed at halftime because he was so upset and so dejected. So thankfully he wasn't there when they stormed back, but some other folks started kind of caving in around us. But, yeah, man, the D-Rob, because everyone thought we were dead and buried. I didn't, though. I actually had optimism, believe it or not. I swear to God I did. But that play and then followed by the Rick's to Sam touchdown and walking out of their stadium chanting it sucks to be a Florida Gator is just, it's good for the soul. It's just really good for the soul. That's my favorite memory, easily.
I would say it's a lot to choose from, man. There's been a lot of good ones. You know, one that doesn't get probably the attention from me that it should is the 2010 one, just because it had been so long. It seemed like you were never going to get there. The 09 game literally was the JV versus the varsity. Gary Danielson even said it and then was like, I don't know why they got rid of Bowden. But either way, so it had been so much misery against them, most of them blowouts. And then... And it was still Urban Meyer at the time. We didn't know that he was going to quit again for the second time. But in that game, you just kind of controlled from start to finish. And at that moment, you're like, okay, something has shifted. I am now covering a program of significance again. And Florida might be on the way down, but Florida State is certainly on the way up. And just the feeling in that stadium was a really big deal, and it was cool. It was just a cool moment, especially because they showed it on TV when the ACC championship game going on. And I think NC State had to lose, and of course they did. So Florida State got to go play Virginia Tech, and that was without Ponder. Anyway, so that was a really cool one. But mine, I think, will always be 98. You had just lost to them twice, 2 years in a row. They cost you national championships. You're down to your third-string quarterback. You're down at half. You can't move the ball at all. And then Peter Warrick happens, and the defense just suffocates Florida for the entire game. That place... one of the five probably loudest stadiums. It's the loudest that stadium's ever been from start to finish. And that fourth quarter was just awesome to watch. Peter Warrick doing his thing, giving him the lead, and then throwing the pass to Dugans to kind of ice it. That'll probably be my all-timer.
Spear 0805, I just want to say, if you watch the games, every starter has made an impact play. You could not say that about the previous staff. Do you want to audit him? Do we just trust him? Do we trust Spear 0805? He's been around since 2020, so still a little up on the ears. Only his ninth ever post.
I'm sure. I would imagine that's true. I would also imagine that's probably true for most teams, just because the chances, the opportunities, the stats of it. You know, if you're on the field for 100 plays, you're going to make a couple impact plays. On defense, though, especially, you see the starting with Akeem Dent. You know, we talked about him a lot on Monday. He had not made a play like that in his career. And in fact, I thought it was really interesting that Norvell brought up early in practice last week, Akeem Dent. We all know my man, he doesn't have the best hands. He's not blessed with great hands. He's got other things. He's got other other traits, other characteristics. He's really good at some things, but he's not great at catching the ball. And in practice last week in a two-minute drill, apparently he went up for a very similar play, jumped up, tried to high point it. It bounced off his hands into a receiver's hands for a touchdown. You know, and none of us listening to me say, none of you listening to me say that are probably very surprised. My man could have had six interceptions as a freshman if he could catch. But for him in that moment, 2 days later, to go up and go high point it, man, like really go up and get it and attack it and not be afraid of the moment. Hopefully that's a big play for his career, but that was by far his most impactful play since he's been at Florida State. But yeah, they've all made them. Everybody that plays a lot, Cooper, Knowles, Robinson, even McClellan coming in for Robinson and leading the team in tackles, playing that game. That's, you know, they've all made plays this year.
Has Cam McDonald had an impact play? Like, I know offensive line, I can't quibble over those guys, but.
Yeah, Cam's had a couple touchdowns, including one where I think he bowled over some guys. He's had some big first down catches, for sure, yeah.
Okay.
Jordan Wilson, too. I asked Dillingham about Wilson, and he's like, this is the guy that defines our program. Because he tore his Achilles. I thought he tore his knee up. I didn't know it was an Achilles. I should. You know, I do this for a living. I should know that. I thought in my head that he had torn his knee up. But to come back, to put in all that work to come back after tearing his Achilles at a school he didn't start with, and he's already a six-year senior, but for him to work that hard to play this season, knowing he's not going to be a huge part of the passing game, and wasn't very good catching the ball early on this season, but he's become better. He's become more of a weapon there. But, yeah, on those two blocks, on those two early touchdowns in the first half, that's Jordan Wilson clearing the way, man. And Dillingham said as much. Like, that's a guy that defines our program because he busted his butt to get back, to work hard, and he's become a real force for them, blocking, but not just blocking, catching too.
McNats, wake up, folks. After this past weekend, SOD game win, that's our second this season. With a win this upcoming weekend against our rivals to the south and then another in a bowl game, we could have four gravestones from this year. We haven't had that many since 2013. The similarities between the two teams are endless.
Is that him saying that or you?
That's him. That's him.
That's funny.
Yeah, I'm not that funny. Really? Did we have – what were the – so what, the ACC championship game was a – Florida game was a SOD game, I guess?
Clemson
Auburn. Game was a SOD game.
Yeah, Clemson.
ACC especially. Championship game and then the national championship game.
Yeah, there you go. I get the ACC championship should not have been a SOD game. I mean, I guess it has to be. I guess that's part of the rules, but come on, man. That was Duke.
Or was Pitt?
By the way,
Pitt wasn't a SOD game. I wouldn't think. Well, maybe it was.
No, there's no way they were an underdog.
Yeah, we were
game.
Ranked. Yeah.
By the way, I really like what Cutcliffe is doing with the program there at Duke. He's really bang up job.
Come on.
You figured the 9-time ACC coach of the year. Wouldn't have the worst team in the country, but here we are.
My question is, if we do not win Saturday, but we get an invite to a bowl, is there any chance that we don't accept it with the reasoning of not rewarding mediocrity? Obviously, the extra bowl practices would be beneficial, but the team might be emotionally spent after overcoming a 4-loss start to the season. I love watching this team play this year. They play with so much heart. Just win. Let's go bowling. Support the sponsors and happy Thanksgiving to all. Oh, they take it. Take it.
Yeah, they would definitely take it. I do think, though, that if you look at the math, it probably can't happen. There are going to be enough 6-6 teams probably to fill out the 40 bowls or whatever it is, which is crazy when you think about the math. Like, you would think that, like, just if there, you would think there'd be more losing teams than 40 or 50. I guess that makes sense. That means there's probably, what, 50 teams that have losing records out of 130.
Yeah.
I guess it adds up. I don't know. I'm not that smart. But I do know looking on the internet the last couple of days, it sure seems like if there's not exactly 80, it's going to be right there. They're not going to be having to fill up a bunch of spots with 5-7 teams. So I don't know that will even be on the table. And it probably won't be on the table, especially because you'd be given Florida. Now, Florida might decline one because they don't have a coach, but I don't think they would do that. I think they'd play. So unless a 6-6 team or a couple of them declined invites, which they wouldn't, I don't think a 5-7 Florida State team would get an invite because there wouldn't be one available. But if they did, they absolutely would take it, 100%.
Bradley Moss, 22, wake up. In the spirit of Thanksgiving and when it comes to Florida State football this season, what are you thankful for, fellas? He says he's thankful for the transfers on defense, Jordan Travis, and the win against Miami. I'm also thankful for all the coverage you guys have provided this year. Happy Thanksgiving, as always. Go Noles. That is the right
amen.
Answer.
That should have been that should have been what he was thankful for first. Yep. Mm-hmm. Jordan Travis can wait. You need to thank us for all we do. Look, man, I'm thankful for you know, these last 2 months. You know, I'll probably say it till the end of Norvell's tenure here. Like it was as dark as it could be after the Jacksonville State game, and then first half of the Louisville game. I'm like, this program is a wreck. I didn't think he was a horrible coach, but I'm like, man, this is going to be. Yeah. This is going to take him a decade. Like, this is even competitive. This is disgusting to watch. And then since the second half of that Louisville game, that's what I'm thankful for. Like, you know, it gives us a purpose. Like, we all love our jobs, even if you're covering a bad team, but it is a grind and a slog when you're covering a horrible football team, which it looked like this was going to be. That's not what we get into this. I don't come to Tallahassee to cover college football. To cover a 1-11 or a 2-10 team, that's not even in your purview. You can't even think that's going to happen. So the fact that they've turned it around, given us something to talk about, something to be excited about, not just for this month or the last 2 months, but moving forward, the next 36 months, I think there's a genuine excitement about the direction of this program. And I'm very thankful for that, not just because of what it does for our numbers, for our livelihoods, which it helps immensely, but just for our, you know, your mental well-being. Of it makes you more excited to do your job when you get to talk about a fun team to cover. And I'm really thankful that we get to do that, man, because it didn't look like that was going to be the case 2 months ago.
I'm thankful for the pillars and the folks who listen to this. Shout out our guy, Daryl, who works at the city. He heard my plea for a Tyler to come fix my house. So the long, arduous battle that has been the Midtown office renovation for the kitchen is nearly complete. He gave me a good tile, guys. He's actually knocking it out right now. So, but in terms of Florida State, I'm thankful for Mike Norvell not having practice open on Thursdays. He tried to give me a quasi weekend. Like, all right, as on Thursday and Friday, all you. But we still end up giving me full workload on Thursday. But then I think about the fact that Ira works every waking minute of the day, and then Tom and Jeff are pretty much working nearly 7 days a week as well. So I'm like, all right, I can't get a weekend. But ultimately,
nobody feels sorry for us.
Yeah, no. But for real, like the whole man, Thursdays were the worst with Willie. Those were just the worst. It was, why are we even here? It's early. We can't even watch a practice. I'm going to ask you questions. Your team is horrible. This is misery. That sucked. But ultimately, Jordan Travis, really? I mean, he's James B. was like, Azon, I'm so proud of you. Way to step up and say you're wrong. Man, I hope I don't come off as like I'm trying to be like Skip Bayless, like broke Skip Bayless over here, like just battling LeBron every time he loses a game.
Right.
You know, like if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, man. I mean, the kids played lights out here, and no reason to think he's going to regress. They're not here. We're all not here. If that kid hasn't kind of figured it out. I don't know if he's ever going to be Lionheart and just, you know. But, man, he's figured out a way to make himself available and perform on Saturdays, and that has us with a win over Miami. And if we can cap it off with this win against Florida and then maybe a bowl game, Gasparilla Bowl, please?
Okay, I see what you're doing.
There's so much to be thankful for. Hey, man, I'm healthy, man. My mom's healthy. My dad's healthy. My brother's healthy. We all have our jobs. None of us lost our jobs. All the crazy stuff that happened in the last 18, 24 months, man, and yeah, man, I get to work with Corey Clark. That's pretty cool.
Amen.
Let's go to Eric from Cincinnati. He goes by Noel43 on the message boards. Wake up! Well. It's finally going to happen this Saturday in Gainesville as the Florida State Seminoles versus Florida Gators are going to play the tradition Thanksgiving weekend of football after last year's COVID season postponed the annual rivalry. FSU needs to come out fast from the start and don't look back. Take the Gator fans, the supposed Gator fans, although they might be more Seminole fans in the stands after their coach was let go leading up to this rivalry game. I see Jordan Travis having another phenomenal game, Jermaine Johnson, Kier Thomas sacking and putting pressure on their quarterback, and our defense making plays. Ooh, here we go. Florida State 42, Florida 21. Let's go bowling. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Man, that would be great, huh? Beating them by 3 touchdowns in their stadium.
Well, hey, you guys were saying if the refs didn't ref, Florida State might have been able to beat BC by 2-3 scores. So
Oh, they definitely would have. Not a might. That would have been a no doubter. That game would have been over early fourth quarter at the worst. You know, I'm not predicting 42-21 or any stretch, but they certainly have a chance, and it's going to be an interesting crowd.
Bro, Samford put 42 on them or 50 something. I don't know.
Yeah, they put 42 on them in a half.
Yeah,
but then they rallied back, and I know Missouri doesn't have a quarterback at all. But they held Missouri to whatever they held them to, what, 16 until overtime. But Missouri's quarterback, they're not good there at all. I mean, you should score. You need the race is to 30 ish, like it always is.
Yeah.
Get there and give yourself a chance. That offense, it will move the ball, some. And I think their interim coach did hint that the Richardson will play. Richardson quarterback will play. If he's healthy enough, he said he's day to day, but if he's healthy enough, they'll definitely put him in the game. So that's something you got to prepare for. But yeah, man, it would be a great finish to one of the craziest seasons in Florida State history.
Let me ask you something real quick. It's not my place to ask the questions. It's the people. It's the Renegade Express. But you know, I didn't see this Sunday afternoon before we started recording the Monday show. But apparently Scott Strickland, the athletic director at Florida, gave Dan Mullen the option to finish out the regular season and coach against Florida State. And apparently he thought about it, deliberated, and said, no, I'll be a distraction. So with that said, and I've been texting all my buddies this, and like no one's really given me a kind of a consensus, but do you think that further deflates an already kind of battered locker room where they're like, man, he's so over us and this team that he didn't even want to come play the biggest game of the season, maybe. He was just like, no, I'm done. Or will that be, and if you're a Florida fan, like you have to be scratching and scraping for any glimmer of hope because you're outmanned in this game, even though you're at home. And not to be cocky or try to, I'm not jinxing anything, everybody. I'm a nobody. I have no control over these things. Will this have like that adverse effect of like, he quit on us? Like that dude, that guy quit on you and me? Like F that guy. Like rally around the flag sort of thing. Like, what is it going to be? If you hear that, like your coach basically he quit on you. I mean, he literally quit on you guys. Like, all right,
well,
man.
I mean, he got fired,
but still, you know, he could have.
No, I mean that's a huge difference. Like Jimbo quit on his team. Jimbo left. Now Jimbo wanted to coach the last game too, and Thrasher's like, hell no, you're not gonna. You're leaving for another job? No, you don't get the chance to coach this team anymore. Sorry, go. That's different. This is the guy got fired. He wanted to be the coach. And then that happens a lot. You know, do you want to finish out the season? I'm surprised Orgeron did because you're just a lame duck coach. It's a weird Zook did it, I guess, because, you know, Zook is Zook.
But to Norvell's point, man, like if you're a competitor, like these games matter. I know you're fired, but like if you like screw those fans, screw that administration that just fired you, go out like Zook. Like, I want to win this game. Carry me off the field. F you guys. I won the game, and you guys, I still wasn't good enough for you.
That would have been a good scene. Them try to carry Dan Mullen.
It's the punk move, and I just wonder how that's going to play in the locker room.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that would affect. I think the bigger deal is obviously the firing. I don't think them getting coached by him for one more game. And I mean, I think his motives there aren't. They're genuine. He doesn't want to be a distraction, and it is a huge distraction to be coached by a guy that's not your coach anymore. And so I think that, you know, I think that makes sense. I think most times they would. Usually fired coaches don't stick around to coach one or two more games. I think the Orgeron thing that's the anomaly. So once he got fired, what's the point? And so I think that was, and who knows, like, if they said, how accurate that is. Like, we gave him the opportunity. He declined or whatever. They're like, maybe they both decided, you know what, it wouldn't be a great idea. What are we going to do for media? They don't really want Mullen to have to answer questions all week about being fired. What are they going to do post-game? You know, after if he wins or if he loses, like, what are they going to do post-game? Like, he hasn't talked to the media since he got fired, right? And he won't. But he'd have to if he was coaching the team. The answer to your question is, no, I don't think that will have a huge impact on them from that mindset. Like, man, our coach quit on us. He could have coached us one last game. I think the impact is, how much are they really paying attention this week? You know, they're not. None of these guys that are coaching them right now are going to be their coaches next year, probably. So it's not like the Florida State when they got to have Odell, a fan favorite, a player favorite, a guy that's the rock of Florida State football, be their interim coach. It's not like that. It's some guy, a special teams coach that's been there, I don't know, a couple years maybe. So how much are they really paying? How much are they really going to give this week in practice? You know they'll play hard. I mean, they're competitors, right? Like you don't want to go get embarrassed. You want to win. You want to beat your rival. The fans will be – there'll be fans there cheering for you. You're going to be wearing a uniform. It's a game. Go try to win it. You're on the field. But from Sunday to Friday, when you don't have a coach, what's that preparation going to look like? How much film are they really going to watch? How much should they care about this game the 6 days leading up to it when you don't have a coach? That's where I think the bigger that's my bigger question with their mindset.
Okay. If you guys ever get bored, Google Tommy West fired Memphis. He got fired and they let him still have a press conference and he just called out the entire program. It was beautiful. But everybody claims that like that was the spark that helped get that program turned around. So yeah, maybe we don't need Dan Mullen giving them pointers on how to fix things down there. Yeah. Let them be miserable. Jimbo Jangles, founder, creator of the Panda Express backfield. Wake up! With the growth we are seeing from Jordan Travis, I think we've got to also credit Coach Dillingham and Norvell. They have done an outstanding job in his development. The confidence, poise, comfortability he's showing really has been impressive. Hard not to think of what he and the offense can become with an upgrade at receiver and better line play next year. Exciting times, boys. No questions this week. 31-24 Florida State. P.S. In playing off Bradley Moss's question, let's all be thankful for Kier and Jermaine and enjoy what most likely is their last game, even if we do go bowling. They have been phenomenal.
Amen to that. They've been – Kier Thomas won ACC Defensive Lineman of the Week, I think for the second time, maybe the third. But overall, I think they've won it six times this year, those two guys. Six of the last 9 weeks, the ACC Defensive Lineman of the Player of the Week has been a Florida State guy. Yeah, they've been – look, and I – so on that 2 points, I know those weren't questions. I thought it was interesting when Dillingham was talking about Travis – he started talking – I've never heard him talk about this before because he's extolled his virtues all season about what he thinks he can be. He never once talked about Jordan's relationship with Norvell. And on Monday he did. And he's like, look, he knows that his head coach trusts in him. And that builds so much confidence in himself, which makes you think maybe I'm reading between the lines a little too much. But maybe Norvell was a lot like many of you. He was not sold on number 13. To start the year. He was certainly not sold on him after the Notre Dame game because he threw Mackenzie Milton out there as a starter the next 2 weeks. But now, so maybe, you know, Dillingham's been pushing for Jordan all along. Now Norvell is finally on the train and seeing, not finally, I mean, Jordan's been a starter now for the last half of the season when he's healthy. But something's happened in their relationship where Jordan trusts that Norvell trusts him. And Dillingham pointed that out, which hadn't been something that he had talked about lately. And that can do wonders for your confidence. When you know the big guy, the head coach, not just the OC, not the QB coach, the head coach believes in you wholeheartedly, that can fill you with a lot of confidence too.
Yeah, that was always kind of my impression. I felt like Kenny was definitely Jordan's biggest advocate in that meeting room and stuff, and that was kind of cool for him to.
Yeah, because I don't think the way Jordan or the way Dillingham talked about Travis after the Notre Dame game, that he wouldn't have said all the things he said about Jordan Travis if he knew that Mackenzie Milton was their starter. Like he thought in his heart of hearts, this is our best guy. We've got to play him. And then I think he was probably overruled. It would seem. I'm speculating there. And that they went with another guy for the next 2 weeks, even though Dillingham probably thought Jordan was their best guy. And anyway, Jordan is clearly their best guy, and it's worked out here the second half of the season. But I also wanted to talk about when he mentioned Kier and Jermaine Johnson. Papuchis was asked on Monday he's asked a lot about special teams, mostly Master Mono. I mean, what are we going to do? Talk about them not being able to return a kick anymore? I mean, we get it. They're not good at it. I mean, they're almost diabolically bad at returning kicks. But that'll happen next season, folks. Get ready. The cavalry's coming. Travis Hunter's going to have 3 kick returns for touchdowns. But he was asked about Jermaine Johnson and Kier Thomas, their production this year. How much does it help when you're recruiting in the portal and when you're recruiting high school guys? And he admitted, as you can imagine, we show these guys that we're recruiting, whether they're high school or portal kids, this is what we said would happen when we recruited these two guys. Here's the production. This is exactly what did happen. We do feature defensive ends, and if you're good, you will make plays in our defense. Here's the proof. And so, yeah, again, like we hope, what Jermaine and Keir Thomas have done this year should only reap more and more rewards at that position as they move forward.
You know, Corey doesn't have an easy job having to carry this show with me on it. But just so you all know, I started the show off asking if we should talk about the press conference. And we did like an 8-minute segment. And we tried to dive into the Renegade Express. And then 38 minutes into it, Corey's like, oh, by the way, let me go back to this. You're trying to make me work on a Friday, Corey. I don't want to work on a Friday. It's a holiday weekend. Let's get through all this. Stay on
schedule.
Okay,
let's go.
Schedule.
Let's go. Sorry.
Stay on schedule.
Sorry. Lightning round.
My bad, though. Also, Spear0805, who earlier asked or brought up the impact play thing, had a two-parter where he said, how many receivers do we take in the portal? I mean, they're going to. I don't know what the number is, but they're. I would imagine, likelihood high that they explore that.
I would think.
If the over-under is 1.5, I think I'd still take the over.
I think I would too, but I think 1.5 is the number to set where you get action on both ways. It really honestly depends on who all sends faxes in early December as well.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But once see where those chips lie, see where our man Destin Hill, what his destiny is, and if he's coming, and then you might just go get one guy in the portal. But I can promise you, I think the pool the lake you're fishing from in the transfer portal for wide receivers will be more stocked than it was this time a year ago.
All right. A little bit of an audible here. It turns out we actually recorded the entire Renegade Express, all the questions that you folks asked, and it went about an hour and 15 minutes. So this is where the show ends. The remaining questions will be answered. Well, they've already been answered, but you'll hear the answers on Friday. We'll drop that for you folks on Friday in your podcast. Just figured we'd give you something to listen to on the way back from Grandma's or on the way to Gainesville, up to Gainesville, down to Gainesville, wherever you're located at. So be on the lookout for that. Live show later today, 5:45 p.m. Headlines, 1 to 3 p.m. Practice, 8:45 a.m. till about 11 a.m. All that going on just on Tuesday. But before we do go, Florida State adds another trophy to the case over at the Tucker Center. Fresh off their victory Monday night over Missouri in the Jacksonville Classic, 81-58. Florida State now 4-1 on the season. Anthony Polite had 14 points for the Noles. He was the leader in scoring for the team. Good balance everywhere. Matthew Cleveland chipped in 13. Matthew Cleveland actually had 10 on Monday night. And then Cameron Fletcher scored 12. Malik Osborne had 10, and Raekwon Evans had 6 dimes, 6 helpers, 6 assistesses, as Kenny Mayne would say. So shout out to Coach Hamm and the boys for claiming a trophy. They're back at it on Wednesday. No rest for those guys. You know, someday you guys will get some days off, and it'll be pretty cool. Yeah, you know, once Thanksgiving, you get that lull in December where you guys don't play a lot of ball, so... They'll be back again in action on Wednesday night against BU, Boston University, the Terriers. By the way, the Terriers mascot, his name is actually Rhett, the Terrier, after Gone with the Wind, in case anybody cared. Okay, I'm done. There we go. Good show in the books. For Corey, I'm Aslan. Thank you for listening to Wake Up War Chant, fueled by DeLuna Coffee. Come explore our world of coffee. DeLuna Coffee features over 24 different blends. DeLuna's unique roasts can be delivered ground finely for drip coffee makers, coarse for the craft crowd, untouched as a whole bean, or even in convenient K-cups. Founded in 2014 by the Lemix family, Ed and Brett are FSU alums and boosters who are extending a special offer to all listeners. Use the promo code WARCHANT15 for a 15% discount. Visit DeLunaCoffee.com and check out their Facebook and Instagram.